views and opinions expressed on the following show are those of the host, and not necessarily those of Bigler Broadcasting or the staff and management of FM Talk 106.5.
It's time for the George Williams Show on FM Talk 106.5. George Williams, retired U.S. Marine Major, Vietnam veteran, retired federal agent, former vice chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, and world traveler, brings his wealth of information, sharing his thoughts on today's politics, and taking your calls and texts at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome, everybody out there in Radio Land. I am George Williams, your host, and I'm so glad to be back here in the studios in the beautiful Mobile, Alabama. Well, folks, there's a lot happening. I hope everybody had a fantastic Memorial Day. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Memorial Day, folks, because, it was set aside for those of us who were involved in different wars. I know I was young, 18, just turned 18 when I landed in the Republic of South Vietnam as a young United States Marine. We opened up Wei Fu Bai, and folks, we made an amphibious landing there. If you don't know what that is, we were in Amtraks, we call them. And you go off the ship. There's a place on the ship where they fill it up with water, and whoop, you get in those Amtraks. I think there were 12 Marines in each Amtrak, and you, about a half a mile or a mile out, those Amtraks will go into the water, and all of a sudden, you're in the ocean, and you can't see anything because they have little small peepholes, and we landed and opened. That was April 26, 1965, and we opened up a place not far from the old imperial city of Wei, and it was a Fu Bai. It was an old air base, and we call it Wei Fu Bai, but it was actually Fu Bai, and we landed there, and that was the start of my tour in Vietnam. And the sad part about it is that once we came home, we were told, because of the demonstrations and the anger about us being in Vietnam, we were told that we were not to wear our uniforms home because it wasn't safe for us. And I think that was a real disgrace, because we were shown films of the end of World War II, and when the soldiers came home, there were crowds greeting them, and they had ticker tape parades and all that. And when we came home, folks, there was nothing. There was nothing. You didn't even want to say you were in the military. And I was stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, the Marine Corps base there. And it was a tough time. And I could tell you what, we are getting more compliments now because I wear my Vietnam cap. And I get more compliments now than I ever did back in 66 when I came back from war, Vietnam. And I was in a war. I was what we call a grunt in the Marine Corps, 0311, which is an infantryman. And a lot of my buddies, a lot of them, were killed and maimed. And this is what we had to live through. But that's who Memorial Day is for, those who didn't come back, folks, those who didn't make it. And almost 60,000 of us did not come back during that war. And that was a war. But it was a political war, and it was fought by us, but it was dictated to us by the politician. And the thing is, a politician should never be involved in the planning of a war. Never, 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 never. Because that's what happened. That's what happened in Afghanistan. That's what happened in Iran, and it's not good, folks. It's not good. Politicians should not be involved in wars, okay? Let the military do it. And I think we're going to play Dick Morris, and he's going to talk about that. Philip, do we have enough time before the break? Or should we wait until we come after? Come back.
We have time.
All right, we have time. We're going to play Dick Morris, and then we'll talk about this.
Happy Memorial Day. You notice I'm wearing blue. That's because there's a movement to honor the 58,000 Americans who've died in uniform since the beginning of the Vietnam War. And we're wearing blue to commemorate that. So happy Memorial Day and honor to those who served our country. I'm a little worried that the radical left is propagandizing the military. There's already a series of directives from the Pentagon to purge the military of white supremacists and to make clear that that ideology is unwelcome in the military. Obviously, we don't want white supremacists and skinheads in our military, and we don't want that philosophy to represent our country abroad when our troops are stationed there. But this could lead to a political correctness that could really undermine the country. One of the great examples of integration in this country, in fact, the greatest example, is the armed forces, where we went from segregated troops in World War II to having Colin Powell as commander of the army a few decades ago. And of course, Barack Obama is commander in chief. And there's been a seamless integration of the races in the military. Now about 20% of the military is black and about 13% is Latino. There were fears that the all-volunteer army would bring only poor people into the military, but that turned out not to be the case. But the worry now is that the radical left, the Black Lives Matter, the condemning of America as a racist country, could infect the military and could undermine morale and their willingness to fight for the rest of us, and could polarize the highly integrated military that we now have. And that's something on this Memorial Day we have to think about and work to make sure it doesn't happen.
All right, folks, that's Dick Morris. And after this break, we're going to be talking about the military because, man, let me tell you, they are making a mess of our military. Barack Obama started it. In 1980, I was in the military. I was in the reserves, but and I was a federal agent at that time. And I used to be a Democrat. And because Carter was so weak and Reagan was so strong, President Reagan convinced me to come over to the Republican Party, and I've been there ever since. I've been here ever since, okay? And it is unbelievable how messed up our military is. I have a son who's a captain. He did 6 years of active duty in the Marine Corps. He's in the reserves now. And talking to him, he said, "Dad, you never believe." And he went in 2012. And that's when President Obama was in office. And he just messed up the military, just like President Carter did. Under President Trump, we had a strong military. And you can tell now, folks, because look what's happening overseas. When President Trump was in office, nobody would dare mess with us. Iran wouldn't. And all of a sudden now, Iran is popping up and they're belligerent because they know that this administration is going to do nothing. Zero, zero, zero. Okay? North Korea. All those. Russia. China. Under President Trump, they wouldn't even dare do these things. And look at them now. You know, about the 110, 120 days that this administration has been in office, And my God, what is happening to this country? It is totally unbelievable. And I'm a retired. I'm a retired major. Okay? I'm a retired federal DEA special agent. And let me tell you, it is pitiful. You have these sanctuary cities who are protecting the criminals, murderers, okay? Illegals, they're protecting them. And you have downsizing of police and defunding police. These people are crazy. They're idiots. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
All right, welcome. Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. Let's get back to Dick Morris' tape. And he was talking about the military and what they're trying to do. It is totally unbelievable, folks, what the... you know, the former general who is the Secretary of Defense now, and what they're trying to do, and they're talking this racial stuff. Now, let me tell you, I joined the Marine Corps December the 12th, 63, and that was right in the middle of this segregation and all that, okay? I left Alabama, Mobile, in 1955. Right in the middle, okay? When I joined the Marine Corps, it was rough. It was not easy. Still, it was segregated. But I'm going to tell you guys what happened. I'll never forget it in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. We went through a camp. We went through boot camp, okay, at Parris Island, South Carolina. Then we went to Camp Geiger for infantry training, ITR they call it. And once we finished ITR, infantry training, we would go to our home base for an assignment. And my assignment was in Hawaii, which is part of the 1st Marine, 3rd Marine Division, 1st Marine Brigade. So I went to Hawaii, but coming out of Camp Geiger, there were eight of us, four whites, four blacks. We were Marines, and we were in uniform. And we had just finished our ITR, infantry training. And we were going to catch a train because there were 45 of us came down from New York and New Jersey when I left Paterson, New Jersey. We flew down by plane. First time I've ever been on a plane. 45 potential Marines. And we, so eight of us were heading back up north to go on a 20-day leave before we went to our individual duty station. I think about four or five of the guys were going to Hawaii with me and ended up in Vietnam with me. But we said, okay, we got 4 hours. What are we going to do? So, we were waiting for the train to come in. Rocky Mountain, South Carolina. Unbelievable. And we went to the white movie. We went to this movie. We didn't know. We just went to a movie. And they said, okay, you white guys can come in, but you black guys, you have to go to the movie around the block. And so we were saying, well, why? You know, we were from up north, and we were used to going to movies together, going to school together, going to church together, doing everything together. And it was the white guys who really raised the fuss. They said, no, we all together. We're Marines. We're in uniform. But unfortunately, they sent about 10 patrol cars there and the police in Rocky Mountain, and they escorted us. They said, if you don't want to go to jail, they escorted us back to the train station, and they left two cops there to watch us so that we wouldn't cause any trouble. Now, we're soldiers. We wouldn't cause any trouble. and we would go back to where we came from, our homes. And that's what we did. And we were so glad to get on that train, to get out of Rocky Mount, South Carolina, folks, because it was totally unbelievable. Now, if these idiots today want to talk about race and, you know, and it is totally unbelievable. They had nothing to do with it. They've never. All right. And I'm going to tell you one other thing. When we were in the Republic of Vietnam, and the reason I'm telling you this, folks, is because we didn't let that affect us. Okay? That didn't stop us. That didn't stop us. That didn't make us, white guys and black guys, Marines, hate each other. We didn't do that. We didn't do that. We were up in Wei Fu Bai, and we were in the base camp area after we come back from operation. And that operation means you're out in the jungle. You're fighting. And we had quite a few of those, okay? And we were in a circle talking like we do in the base camp area. And the little Vietnamese boys, you know, they come around with sodas and stuff. They allow them to come on our base. And so they gathered around us. And one of the guys said, "What are you guys looking for?" They said, we're looking for your tail. You monkey, you belong in the tree." And one of the guys hit one of the kids, and we stopped him. Said, no, don't do that. They were told by some of the guys that we black Marines were monkeys and we belong in the tree. But did we let that stop us, folks? No way. No way. So those were my two experiences that I was aware of while I was a young Marine. Okay, but that didn't stop us. Now, is that happening today? Let me tell you something. I left Alabama in 56, came back in 2006 after retiring from the federal government. I was in for over 40 years and got back to Alabama. Within 2 years, I'm the number two man in the Alabama Republican Party, senior vice chairman. Okay, I've traveled all over Alabama. I have not, and I tell people this, I have not experienced one racist overtone, okay, since I've been back to Alabama. But yet and still, when I look at the news, when I listen to people, all they're talking about is racist Alabama and the racist people, okay? I mean, and where are they getting it from? Well, you know, Montgomery, Birmingham, Selma, this is what the white folks did to the blacks. Well, hell, what the heck are the blacks doing to the blacks now? They're killing each other, folks. They're killing each other, okay? Every now and then you have an incident where a black is killed or shot by a police officer, and they're not all white police officers, okay? They're not all white police officers who is killing some of these blacks, but they're doing it justifiably because if you're out there and the police stop you, okay, and they ask you some questions, answer the question. What do you got to hide? Your ID. Show up your ID. Show up your driver's license. But now some dudes, okay, and they're doing it more so than when I was in uniform. Before I became a DEA agent, I was in a uniform for over 6 years. And let me tell you, it's hell out there, folks, okay? You may see the end result of something, but when you're out there and you're a policeman, you don't know what you're going to be confronted with. You don't know what. Right? You do not know what you're going to be confronted with. So it's a situation by situation by situation. Nobody afterwards can tell you what you could have done. Nobody. No, they can't truly tell you, okay? So you take some action. Now, I admit, I'm not calling them cowboys, you know, police cowboys. There's some cowboys out there that that need some disciplinary action, and let's do it. Take the action, okay? And I told my children, my son, who's a captain in the Marine Corps Reserve, and my daughters, I said, if you ever stop by the police, answer their questions, do what they ask you to do, and they'll let you go. And 9 out of 10 times, that's what happened, okay? Unless you got a warrant or something on you. So you're not going to beat the police out on the street. There's no way you're going to do that. You're going to lose, all right? And then this Floyd guy, all he had to do was they tried to put the cuffs on him. And that, but another thing about this Floyd individual, this guy's been a criminal all his life. I just saw a video when he was on Judge Judy, when he was 20 years old, something like that, and he was in trouble then. Okay? This guy's been in trouble all his life. All his life, he's been in trouble. He was committing a crime when the owner of that store called the police. Right? He was high on something. But now they're putting him on the pedestal with Dr. Martin Luther King. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Okay? Here's a guy who's been a criminal all his life. Now, I'm not saying he should have been killed. He should not have been killed. Okay? But if this man would still be alive, if he would have done what the police told him. All right? That's it. But no, he fought them. He resisted. Okay? And how can you put a guy like that, who's been a criminal all his life, a drug addict all his life, and put him on the same pedestal with Dr. King? Are you people crazy out there? And then that brings us to this Black Lives Matter. You know, the Democrats are just looking for something like this individual Floyd, okay, to bring up, elevate, as if the whole majority of white folks in America and white cops are prejudiced or they hate the black folks. All right? It's all bull. It's all bull. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome back. And let's get back to this military because, I spent so many years on active duty and reserve duty, like 42 years, folks. Okay, so I think I know a little bit about the military. And I was a field grade officer, so I know a little bit. But let me tell you something, okay? What Obama did and what Biden is doing now, I mean, nothing but degrading to our military. And it makes us appear, in my opinion, indifferent with our allies and even our enemies, that we're nothing, and Ted Cruz alluded to this, we're nothing but patsies, okay? Because we don't know who's in the military, if it's a man in the uniform or a woman, okay? And I can tell you, being in combat, folks, I mean real combat, would I want a female in a foxhole with me in combat in Vietnam, it never would have worked. It never would have worked. You have a conventional war is one that's fought in the cities and you have houses and all that. A jungle war, out there in the jungle, you may have villages set up, and small houses made out of this and that. And that's a lot different. You've got a conventional war, and you've got a jungle-type war. And I don't think a female would have made it in a jungle-type war. It's very different, very different. And it's rugged, folks. And we had to endure a lot. Not that females can't endure, okay? Some of them probably can. But let me tell you, it's not easy, and you have to look out for each other. But it's rough. It is definitely rough. So, and Ted Cruz, we're talking about this in the military, and morale is so bad. That's why my son got off of active duty. You know, he was a captain, he was a company commander, and when you have men wearing female military uniform and women wearing male uniform, okay, this is a terrible morale factor in the military. It's terrible, and there are plenty of problems. And then you get a Secretary of Defense, General Austin from Mobile here, talking about white supremacy in the military, okay? And that's another morale factor. So he's going to try to get to the bottom of it. Right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And the way since President Obama was in office, we don't even know much about the military, who's who, because he allowed everybody to come in. Everyone. That's just like in the government. He allowed people to come in from different countries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And who is in the military? Who? Yeah. It's totally unbelievable. The morale is so low. Yeah. It's so low. As a matter of fact, during the commencement ceremony with President Biden, he even told some of the troops that, you can clap now. They didn't want to clap. They didn't want to clap. Okay. So this is it's worse now than when President Carter was in office. It's worse. It's a lot worse, folks, when he was in office. Okay. And the Secretary of Defense, you're a soldier. You don't have to do what these guys tell you to do. You were in the military all those years, 35, 40 years, and all of a sudden you're going to try to change the military from the way it used to be to what President Biden, President Obama wanted it to be? Not good, folks. Definitely not good. Morale in the military is lower than when President Carter was in office. Okay? We need somebody like President Trump. The military loved them. The morale in the police forces, okay, it's horrendous. Horrendous. You treat the police officers like they're dirt. Okay? They're dirt. But yet and still, when something happened, where's the police? Where's the police? Where's the police? Why aren't they here? Hell, you don't want them to be there. You don't want them to be there. So why should they come and help you? And these cities, de Blasio from New York, and whoever she is in Chicago, or whatever she is, these sanctuary cities, isn't there some way that the these folks can be arrested for talking about a sanctuary city and not arrest criminals? You know, when I was an agent stationed in New Mexico, when we had prisoners, we used to take them. We didn't have federal facilities like in the big cities. In Miami, you have the MCC, and you have New York. Those are federal detention places where you can take your prisoners, okay? But if you're at a place like Mobile, the federal agents have to take them to the sheriff or local police to house them there until they can transport them to the federal facilities. And you've got some of these cities saying, we don't want your prisoners. We won't take your prisoners. New York is one of the worst locations. California is another one. Yeah. They don't want to take federal prisoners. And the worst thing about it, some of these prisoners are illegals. And one case in New York where they let the prisoner go, and then he went and killed someone. Okay. Now, I think the mayor, city council, they should all be arrested for complicity in the murder of that person. Okay? I think they should be. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't tell you, but there should be a law against that. President Biden telling federal agents, you should only be arresting somebody at the border unless they're involved in a felony, a crime. Hell, coming across the border is a crime. I worked the border for 3 years, folks. I know about the border, okay? It's just not innocent people coming across the border. They're bringing everything, drugs, huge amounts of drugs, criminals. You got people crossing the border who are from Middle East countries, who are from Europe, who are from Asia. We don't know who they are, folks. Okay? And we look at the southern border, but I can tell you the northern border is just as bad. Look at all those folks who came in on the northern border that are up in Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin. They came in through the Canadian border. Some of those borders posts up into Canada along the northern U.S. frontier up there, they close them down at 4 or 5 o'clock, and they put a little chain across there. And people could just walk across. That's what happened to a lot of folks in Minnesota, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, a lot of those northern areas up there. They just come in, went across the border, okay? Went across the border. So we've had all kind of folks come in through Canada. Hopefully, Canada has, put more immigration officials, police officials to stop it. But that's where a lot of those folks came from the Canadian border, from across the Canadian border. I had a buddy who worked the Canadian border, and he told me it's unbelievable the problems they had up there, with people. And a lot of those border posts are not even manned. So they could just come across. And that's what they've been doing in droves, okay? Dozens of them. Dozens. And that's what happened, folks. That's what happened. So these are some of the things that is happening to this country. And you wonder, you have 10 years, I can recall the 80 censors, the 90 censors. We had so many million. All of a sudden, we have another 25 million. Now, we didn't have that many babies born in America during that 10-year period. Where did they come from? Well, that's where they came from, other countries. And I'll tell you about that after this break, because those other countries, no way would they allow this to happen in their countries. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back, folks. Now, I was just reading about President Biden going up to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And tomorrow is the 100th anniversary of that massacre up there. Okay. And part of his speech was that he wanted to close the gap, okay, the wealth gap for minorities. How the hell are you going to close a wealth gap when you're giving all this money to individuals who are not working? Okay. Is that the way you close it? No. The way you close it is that you make jobs available for people to work. To work and earn money and save money. This is how you do it, President Biden. This is how you do it. Now, what way are you talking about? Giving them money giving this one, that one money, and that's going to close the wealth gap? I don't think so. I really, really don't think so. One way to do it is through education. Right? Another way to do it is providing the opportunities for those individuals to have employment. But one way not to do it is to give free money to people who don't work or who you're trying to encourage not to work. Somebody told me the other day that they think the Biden is doing this because he want to keep the unemployment level down. No, you're not President Trump, okay? President Trump did that. He did that. And you, in 120 days, have messed everything up. Right? You've really messed it up. This man had the lowest unemployment rating in 50 years in America. He had more people working in America than they've ever had. Okay? And you and your 120-some days have messed up everything. Messed up everything. Now you have people in America who don't want to work. I had a couple of my relatives who were collecting. They said, why should I go out and work when the money's coming in free? Why should I work? Unbelievable. I tell them, I said, the money is not going to be coming in free all the time. You better go out and you better get a job. You better think about your retirement. And that was one thing when I worked for the government, okay, and talking to some of the old timers. Yeah, man, I got 2 years before I retire, 4 years before I retire. Then I could take it easy. And that, I'm telling you, that entered my mind. And I said, okay, that's why I stuck with the government. And another thing, my father was born in Mount Sterling. My father's mother was a Choctaw Indian woman, as his grandmother, okay? His grandfather was a slave. And he married the Indian woman. And they had seven children. And my grandmother was one of those seven children. And she had 15 children. And my father was one of the oldest. So guess what? He had to leave school at the second grade level. So he couldn't either read or write. Okay? But he could count. He could count. And his memory was fantastic. He lived to be 96 years old. But he told me about his grandfather and his father. His father was a preacher, a Methodist preacher. And he was born in Choctaw County, in Mount Sterling, Alabama. And my father had a stroke at the age of 73 working on the construction site in New Jersey. Okay? And at 73, you should be relaxed. You should be enjoying your life. But he was out there working because, there were eight of us, and then they picked up six more. So there were 13 of us that my family, my mother and father, had to take care of. Okay, and it wasn't easy, folks. Let me tell you, 13. When I was 10 years old, there were eight of us at the house. This was in New Jersey after we left Alabama. Came home from school, and there were six additional children, with the youngest one 7 months old. Okay? It was not easy. And my father worked until he was 73 and had a stroke. So I said, that's not going to happen to me. That encouraged me to go back to school, get an education, and stay with the government, because as a federal agent at that time, classification is 1811, and you had to retire at age 55, okay? You needed 20 years in order to retire. And now I think they moved it up to 57, but you had to retire at 55 as an 1811. And that's all, Secret Service, FBI, DEA, custom, if non-uniform. I'm talking about non-uniform. Those guys and women who are 1810 are in uniform. So they can go. They can go up to their 60. But as 1811, you had to go at 55. So that encouraged me, my father did, to stick with a job where I had a retirement. And that's why I did it. And everything that was told by the older guys is true. I'm retired, and I'm twice retired. I'm also retired from the military as a major, okay? And I'm what they call a double dipper. I mean, you're getting two government paychecks. But Social Security messed me up, folks. I'm only getting like $300 from Social Security, and I put in money all those years. And you know, when you get your Social Security statement, it tells you up until the time you're eligible how much you'll be getting a month. So they were telling me I was getting like $1,200 a month, up to $1,500. So when I finally applied for Social Security, they tell me, well, you're only getting $295. I said, why? This statement, and I took my statement there, and this statement said I was getting this money. No, you retired twice from the government. So that's why they punish me. Right? So they're probably giving it to the illegals, taking my money that I deserved, that I paid. I paid it into that system. And so this is what happened, folks. This is definitely what happened. I just wanted to let you guys know what's on my mind. And some of the things that happen in my lifetime, And then you have all these idiots out there talking about Black Lives Matter, talking about race relationship and endemic segregation, endemic, all of this. The reason they're saying that, folks, is they're using it as a crutch to get minority votes. And that's what they're doing. But guess what? They're losing a lot of minority votes. I am currently the outreach coordinator for the Alabama Republican Party. And I can tell you, I am outreaching. There's a lot of people coming out, even from the Democratic Party. And we welcome you, Democrats. Let me tell you, I used to be on that side, okay? But we welcome you to come over to the party. Come over. Because don't go over that cliff with those idiots who call themselves Democrats. Don't do that, folks. And who's trying to take this country and I don't know what they want to do with it. I don't know. You know, how can require an ID card be racist? Because everybody is required to have them, not just black, whites, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Think about that, folks. All right, we're going to have a guest next week, a very important guest. Until then, folks, stay safe. Va con Dios, everybody.